DIY is supposed to be showing people that it's something that you can do. It's not just do it yourself. It's do it, get some friends together and you all make something happen.
This is Champagne is Also a Band podcast. One songwriter, one song. I'm Sven, your host for a journey into the music of Champaign-Urbana. Recorded in the Blue Box Studio with a songwriter from the Champaign-Urbana music scene, past or present. Champagne is Also a Band podcast is proud to be a part of the Champaign Showers podcast network. Welcome to Champagne is Also a Band podcast. Today, I have Johnny Lissardi. And you may know Johnny Lissardi from such bands as Point Blank, Devastratic, Pleasant Nightmare, Swift Turtle, Exploding Boy, The Numb Chucks, Street Justice, Daukus, The Tuesday Lovelies, Aquila, Sun Stereo, Power of Dusk, The Get Gons, Jug, Unseen Forces, and the Champagne Symphony Orchestra. So, Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Today, we're going to be talking about your song, Eyes in the Back of Your Head, off of the promo number 2 EP by Unseen Forces. So without further ado, let's listen to the song.
Sweet.
Welcome back. So, of course, my first and favorite question to always ask is, what came first? Was it the music or was it the lyrics?
This song for sure was the music. Actually, the first thing was the kind of, I guess, like the pre-breakdown part. That was kind of the first part of the song. The lyrics came way, way, way later. I probably wrote that first riff last spring, probably. So this time last year. And then it just kind of started to, well, the band didn't really, we played our first show in September, so that was kind of when we did it, and I don't even think I had complete lyrics yet back then, but we had a show and we had the song, so we just kind of, I was like, I'll figure it out.
When you say that pre-breakdown riff, are you talking about that chromatic ascension and the ascension part, or is that the part where it has the, it's like the return to the first theme, but it has more of the what is it? The string mute.
That's a funny way to reconnect it. Yeah. I guess that's kind of what I was talking about. Yeah. Like the guitar dropout part with the, yeah, that kind of like, I don't know. I conceived that sound as being like a 90s hardcore thing. Kind of like, I was listening to this band Refused, specifically their EP Everlasting is really kind of has a lot of that kind of noise going on. This other band, this kind of band from Chicago, Buggin', they have a lot of that kind of going on. Who else? This band from Springfield, Prevention, they do that a lot. This kind of cool, you know, that kind of cool, noisy, you know, string noise thing. I was like, oh, that's that's fun. I was just kind of messing around with a little, I had just bought this tiny little practice amp.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, what happens if you turn it all the way up, turn the gain all the way up? I was like, oh, that's cool. I was just kind of making noises and just kind of started playing that. It's only, you know, just like a G note or whatever it is. And I was like, oh, that's, I like that. That's cool. Just started making some rhythms up and then recorded it on my phone, put it away for a while. And
how do you communicate that? It sounds like it kind of came together after sharing it with the band, or does that, I mean, I'm kind of curious where it kind of pulls itself together. Like, it sounds like you had a bunch of ideas,
yeah,
and then it came together.
The band at first was just me in my room, but when we started having shows, I got some friends to fill out the live lineup. But yeah, and still the recorded band is just me.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I play in a bunch of other bands. It's hard to wrangle everybody's schedule. You know, I've played in a lot of bands over the years, and a lot of times you kind of have to not concede an idea, but, you know, you try to be as collaborative as possible when you can, and you don't want to be, you know, it's hard for me to kind of be like, no, you must play the part that I wrote. And, you know, I try to be diplomatic, but, you know, sometimes you just kind of want to hear it how you conceive it. So it's like, well, I'll just kind of write it and record everything. And, you know, my whole concept for the band was, I'm going to put some songs together. When the time comes, I'll wrangle some friends and we'll play a show, maybe. For the most part, it was just, I'm going to get some songs together and see where that goes.
So promo number two is kind of a proof of concept, right? That's all you.
Yes. Yeah, the art was done by Dan Wachtel, who's, I think, been on the show before. He did the art.
Episode 30. When you perform this live as Unseen Forces, kind of off mic, you and I had a little bit of a conversation that you don't really get nervous that often, but you get nervous just before an Unseen Forces. And I'm wondering, is there a little bit of that because the whole concept was created, you know, the whole piece was created from your work. There's this new transition of you've taught these parts to people and then you have to do that. I'm just curious, like,
yeah, a little bit of it is, it's mostly I'm nervous just to perform my own parts correctly. It is a little bit, so my bandmates, John and Eric, also plays in Jug, we don't get to practice very much, so I kind of force them to do things very, very quickly.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, in orchestra world and classical music world, you just have to learn stuff fast and you might have to just do something quickly.
Yeah.
And that's also kind of, you know, how I came up with my friends, you know, in, you know, Point Blank and all that kind of stuff, or the Nunchucks, those bands. We just would throw stuff together kind of fast. At the time, maybe we weren't very good, but the point was we were just going to get stuff together as quickly as we could. If we were going to get asked to play a show, we would just, you know, try to get ourselves together as quickly as we could. So it's a big ask of John and Eric, but they're great. And, you know, I kind of just rope them into doing this without a lot of practice. So it's a little bit of, it's mostly nerves for me, but it's kind of like, if, you know, my students are having a recital, I'm sitting there just as nervous as they are or something. It's like, okay, we're going to do great, everybody. Everybody, we're going to do great. Brave faces, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, once we get into the first song, or once the, you know, once the feedback kicks in, it's like, okay, let's have some fun.
Let's talk about bringing in the new parts. In, like, you came up with the original riff. Where did it go from there? And then when did you incorporate the lyric?
I think I had the riff, and then I was like, this is cool. Let's see. Let's try to get, you know, a beginning part to it. Again, I was just playing on my electric guitar with this little practice amp. I was like playing some single string stuff. I was like, okay, that could be a bass intro. I think it was probably that same afternoon that I figured out that noise thing, made just a little track on my GarageBand app on my phone, and it's pretty much the same how it goes. I think I fumbled around a little bit with the kind of thrash metal riff part, which is kind of an anthraxy thing. I kind of messed around with that a little bit, but it's pretty much how I did it the first time from that little phone recording. I think I was doing maybe parts of it slightly differently, but structurally it was kind of all there. Even that kind of little walk-up thing. Didn't have an idea of a band or anything, no name, no anything. It was just like, oh, this is just another, you know, another punk song or whatever that I'll put out eventually. Yeah, so I had the song. The lyrics came way later. I think probably sometime this past summer, I came up with the end part, again, kind of more thrash metal that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That was a summer ad when I was thinking, okay, you know, I got some songs together. I guess I better start thinking of who I'm going to ask to be in the band, or maybe start figuring out recording these songs, whatever. We'll figure it out. I had the complete song for a while, and then we got asked to book a show. Jug couldn't do it, so I was like, okay, well, I guess it's time to ask some friends to be in this band, and we'll put the songs together. So Eric, who plays in Jug, was down, and then John, who is, I guess, my, you know, my girlfriend's brother-in-law, my brother-in-law, technically, whatever, he was down to play. I kind of made a little drum track with my electric kit, my little tiny kid kit, and then just some amp software, and just made some little demos, and no vocals, no anything, and just sent them that. And then I kind of had to write all the vocals that week before the show. So some of them were complete ideas. Some of them, this song especially, was just kind of marble mouth and some mean sound and stuff for a while. And then I think once I had the idea to actually record everything the way it sounds in promo number two, I was like, okay, sit down, write some lyrics, and go from there. So yeah, the lyrics came probably 2 weeks before I recorded the song.
It's interesting to see how one influences the other. You know, the music influences the lyrics influence the music. I don't know how to ask this the correct way, but I'm going to try. When you said, okay, I'm going to start writing these words, did you have an idea that this would be element that would be whatever you want to call that, that is always watching over you and basically kind of the fascist?
I mean, a lot of the lyrics for this project kind of are that because, you know, it seems like that's a, you know, that's a lot of the world we're kind of dealing with today, unfortunately, if you're plugged into stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff would just kind of sneak in there. I didn't have too much of an idea when I was like, let's write a very specific, these lyrics, this stuff. All my lyrics happen for the last 7 years or so. All my songwriting happens when I'm walking the dogs. So, and people say they see me walking my dogs all the time. A lot of times you'll see me kind of air drumming out a part, or, you know, kind of air guitaring something, you know, just kind of thinking stuff out in my head a lot. And I'm trying to be a lot more diligent about going inside the house, grabbing a guitar, getting it all out there. I've had albums just leave me on those walks, walk in the door, they're gone.
Right.
Whole albums are the best stuff, but whatever.
Right. Well, just be happy for the ones that you can remember, right?
Like, yeah, that was another one of these. It was kind of like, okay, you know, I had my headphones in, had the demo, just kind of playing it over and over and over, got the dogs on the leash, and, you know, just got my notes app open, trying to just kind of jot stuff down. And especially for this band and for Jug, it sounds a little silly, but I try to just, in hardcore, you just kind of start with something that sounds cool and sounds kind of mean and tough, and you just go from there. So I try to start there, and then after I get something out and get something going, then I can kind of tweak it. I suffer from being wordy sometimes in my lyrics, and I don't think this song is wordy, so it was kind of intentionally more simple. I don't know if this is something I picked up. I think I picked it up from an Ian MacKaye interview. He said, oh, I start with being more personal, but as the song goes on, you know, it's a bit more general. So it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to try to get in the headspace of, you know, latent paranoia I think we all can feel. And, you know, understandably how a lot of the stuff you hear from people, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you fall on, a lot of people have a lot of stuff they're scared about and, you know, thinking people are out to get them. Not to throw in the band name, but there's unseen forces happening all around us, you know, making these things happen. And it, you know, it's there's, so it's, even the band name is reversed to this kind of paranoia. You know, we have a song on promo number one called Paranoia. You know, it's easy to feel kind of violent and feel a little scared and feel a bit, you know, kind of you have to be watching out for yourself all the time. And yeah, that's kind of just what I started thinking, and then just tried to, you know, come up with some simple lines off of that. Nothing too thought out in this song, lyrics-wise.
This may feel like a bit of a redirect here, but it's something that keeps popping into my head and then I keep forgetting to ask about is, I'm curious about how you think about music, because, or at least how a piece of music is created, or I feel like you look at how things are created in how they fit in reference to something else. So in a certain sense, you'll say that this part reminds you of, you know, 90s thrash or whatever it is some kind of style or particular band. And I'm just kind of curious if that is that something that's really active in your foreground of thought, or is that something that it just ends up being something that's, as a way to describe something post-creation?
Unseen Forces is kind of a... I've learned a lot about songwriting and how to write a song from being in Power of Dusk and being in Jug. So that's kind of a Jug thing, is they'll talk about, we need a punk part, we need like a thrash part, we need a two-step part, we need a this kind of part. And before, I was mostly writing for kind of more like pop punk bands, or more, you know, straightforward punk bands. So it's more kind of chord progression stuff. We'll do, you know, we'll do the A minor chord progression for, you know, four bars, whatever it is. Do your normal four, you know, four bar phrase thing, and then you switch to the other thing, and then maybe have a riff for the bridge, whatever, you know, that kind of writing. For this stuff, I definitely was taking influence from, oh, I need a, you know, I need an intro that reminds me of like, oh, I want, you know, it's, I think in a lot of hardcore bands, I think we think about moshing, like what the crowd's going to do. So it's like, okay, you know, I want an intro here where, you know, okay, it's a bass intro, so I can just like let my guitar feed back and kind of like people can be dancing and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, cool, you know, got that going. And then, okay, that happens for, you know, the same kind of four bar phrase type of thing, which I don't know that all my bandmates think about it that way, but you know, the normal how music flows, the normal phrasing. And then, you know, you just kind of build it from there. A lot of these Unseen Forces songs definitely are all focused around, okay, I want to see people like, you know, moshing and dancing and having fun.
That's funny. I just basically drew this very strange comparison in my brain that may or may not be fair at all, but I almost thought of it as doing in much the same way as like square dancing or any of the now I'm totally blanking on the I'm going to probably have to voice over this, but like, and here it is. The style of music that I was thinking of is contra dance. You know, like what the band Meadowhawk from episode 114 does. We know that in that we have to have a section that has kind of a 3-4 kind of that pace, or we have to have a 1-1 and we have to have it at this tempo. And we want to make sure that everybody can get these dance moves.
Oh man,
in.
That is great.
And but I just love how the way that you described it, I was
that's
like,
so, oh man,
you feel like you have to fill out your dance card, right?
That's a real, oh wow. That just described hardcore in the best way ever, because that's it, is you have to get all of these dance moves out. You have to have the part where everybody, you know, runs around fast in a circle, your circle pit part. Kids now aren't so good at the circle pit part, but whatever, we'll figure it out. And then kids now, they really like to two-step or skank. That's like a big thing, is skanking.
Isn't so that from like ska?
It's from like 80s hardcore and ska.
Okay,
You know, they would do like the only skank. Term. Yeah. And then like in 80s and 90s thrash and stuff, moshing, not like really the push pit stuff, but kind of, I guess people call it the karate pit, or, you know, that kind of stuff, fighting invisible ninjas, which is fun. So that's a big thing now. In my songs anyway, if I can get all three of those into one song, you get a nice fast circle pit, get a nice skank part, and then a nice heavy, you know, karate pit part, we're successful.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe that in sometimes there's so many correlations to music and language that, or even, I don't know, kind of like a syntax, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Like for me, honestly, I'm not as keen, you know, the kids say I'm not as keen on the hardcore as I should be, but I literally wouldn't be able to hear that and be like, okay, this is the circle part. Like there's this language that's being conveyed, right? I just find that so fascinating, because like, how does something like that even get established, right? Like, so I don't know. Sorry for the tangent.
No,
but
I mean,
just,
that's
like, what?
That's a big thing that, you know, I wonder all the time. And I think a lot of people do, is like, how do, you know, it sounds silly, but how does like a mosh style evolve? It's all on YouTube. I watched this Bad Brains video. It wasn't on YouTube, but I watched it on Fuse back in the day. In the day for millennials. Yeah. In the Bad Brains video, all these guys were doing this kind of skank move. And I was like, okay, that's cool. That's fun. When you're out there dancing around, There's this really funny video. It's from like an 80s hardcore video. It's this guy just in a room just describing how to mosh by himself. I think his name's Dave or something. He's like, so people call it the skank, so people call it the slam. It's great. It's all these like old videos. There's like a, oh man, real heads will know this one. It's Japanese Mosh Style 2. That's some real stuff on YouTube.
Okay, so at some point you're going to have to like find a link to that, send that to me, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Dan Wachtel's going crazy at home if he's listening.
Okay, so if Dan, when you hear this, send me a message just so I know that that actually happened. What I'd like to do now is tell you what my favorite part is, and I think for me, the part that really sticks out is just the part that's like the transition just before your outro. And I think that that's the one that you keep mentioning where it's like the theme one, but with muted strings. And then it's after the line of surrounded on all sides.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of the intermission, the more instrumental part.
Yeah. We call it the guitar dropout.
Okay.
It's just guitar there. So yeah. Guitar
gotcha.
Dropout. I don't know.
But honestly, like there's something that in my brain makes it, in one sense, you think it's really kind of simple, but there's so many things going on. Like the drum is, you could almost say like the drum is doing this like 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the guitar is kind of like dancing around, doing all sorts of different rhythms around that in syncopation, in sync, and back and forth. And then there's that, as much as I enjoy that part, the part that really just gets me is like just before you do your outro part of the you gotta have eyes in the back of your head, there's this, it feels like a change in meter, like it just like what, you know, like it like it does this nice thing where up until that point you can kind of get kind of lulled into just this kind of thing in your head that just sticks, and then that like it's like a shock to the system in a way,
right?
So I like that. It's like that wake up part, like, and there's nothing wrong about like getting kind of lulled into something with music, because I think that's a cool thing about music too. But when it does something that just snaps you out of it, I love it. Or that snaps you out of it, I really enjoy that, because it gives that complexity that it seems simple but it's complex, which I love. So
cool.
yeah. But so I guess in turn, I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite part of the song?
Thank you. That was cool. I like that part too. I would say I probably like the guitar dropout is fun. That's another one that I'm kind of like, okay, make sure I like play it right. When I recorded the drums, that was also really what I, that kind of stay, you know, just stay 1, 2, 3, 4. And then if I can stay 1, 2, 3, 4, then I can kind of, you know, do all the guitar stuff I need to do. But that was definitely tricky recording. I was like, it took a while. And then, kind of coming out of that into that would be the skank part or the two-step part. I like that part because I'm happy with that outro riff, that kind of thrash metal thing. I hadn't really written something like that before. I wouldn't consider myself a super expert guitar player or really expert in, well, you know, I got a couple degrees in violin, so like whatever that means, I can handle myself on that instrument. But as far as, you know, guitar, bass, drums, or even vocals, all that kind of stuff, or recording, production, you know, I don't consider myself an expert at any of that stuff. Or, you know, I'm probably below average for most players. And definitely in the recording realm, I don't have any knowledge of that stuff. Most of the stuff that I am coming up with is, you know, I haven't really played stuff like that before, so I kind of have to write something that sounds like that. So I was kind of happy with that simple little, you know, descending riff. I thought it worked. Before, it was just kind of doing the same riff, but just kind of picking up the pace again, doing the two-step kind of skank part. Mm. It's, again, as you were saying, that's the idea, is you kind of get everybody into the kind of groovy stuff, and then you kick it back up with, you know, some more dancey stuff, checking off your dance card. We're going to have to make hardcore dance cards for the next
show.
That
would be amazing. Oh my gosh.
That's so
like,
good.
Like kind of a bingo sort of thing. Like make sure you get every.
I've never been to a line dance or a square dance or whatever, but if they have actual cards, somebody infiltrate and get me one.
My last question is, why did you pick this song to be the song you wanted to talk about today?
I guess I was thinking about that. I was between this one and another Unseen Forces song called No Escape. Check it out. Promo number one. I picked this song just because I think it started and ended as I came up with it. So I didn't have to change a lot of stuff. I found that, you know, little demo on my phone, and it's pretty much just like the song is, it, you know, minus the lyrics, but the rest of the structure is pretty much exactly the same. So I was like, okay, you know, it was, you know, this band has been the first time I've really, you know, I record all the music, I kind of write everything. It's the first band that I've been able to really just have my ideas go out there. And this was kind of the first song that ended up being an Unseen Forces song. So it all kind of worked out conceptually from beginning to end. I didn't have to change that much. Just kind of flowed out nicely. Coming up with the lyrics, I think, you know, Eyes in the Back of Your Head's relatively catchy. It's fun for me to try to make up some, you know, make some words into a faux chorus. It's hardcore. There's not that many choruses. It was just a fun one to put together, and you know, I figured it'd be a fun one to talk about. Thanks everybody that's checked it out, and you know, thanks everybody that dances to it at the show, and you know, whatever. If you know the words, come take the microphone.
Champagne Is Also a Band podcast is proud to support Jubilee Cafe. Jubilee Cafe is a free weekly meal program at Community United Church of Christ, 805 South 6th Street in Champaign, Illinois. Jubilee Cafe serves a home-cooked meal from 5 to 6:30 each Monday. Their mission is to feed hungry people by cooking healthy, delicious meals and by serving their guests restaurant style with servers waiting on tables. Jubilee Cafe is open to anyone who cares to eat with them. Because food insecurity among students is so high, they serve students as well as others in and around the Champaign-Urbana community who struggle with hunger. Meals are free to all and will be served each Monday evening. Located in the accessible lower level of the building at 6th and Daniel Streets in Champaign. For more information on the meal or how to volunteer, go to the Jubilee Cafe CUCC Facebook page or email them at jubilee.cafe@community-ucc.org. That's jubilee.cafe@community-ucc.org. Welcome back. So, Johnny, what is your favorite Champaign-Urbana music venue, past or present? And you can name venues if you'd like.
Man, that's a hard one. There's been so many. I've had a lot of fun at a lot of them. I'm going to say a current one, actually. I'm going to say the Space CU. That's my answer. And, you know, special shout out to C4A as well, where I work.
Awesome. Oh, so you work at C4A?
I do,
too?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
I teach violin and viola at C4A.
What is it about the space that you really like?
You know, Doug and Ian are, you know, Doug's a buddy. I don't know Ian as well, but he seems cool. Friends of mine, you know, work over there. I'm addicted to hamburgers as well as diet soda. So, you know, they serve a great hamburger. You know, they're, you know, ethically, they're DIY, you know, punk rock people. So it's nice to have a spot that's, you know, down to have live music. You know, especially, you know, DIY bands and punk bands and stuff like that, or heavy music. You know, it's just a cool place to hang out. And, you know, it's a new business. So just wanted to give them a shout.
I'm curious about when did C4A, I understand that it fits with their mission, but it seems like for an organization, if you're going to go out to find a hardcore show or a punk show, that is where you're going to find the show, right? Like, so C4A has become almost a venue for, you know, hardcore shows.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a fine tradition of just, you know, some hardcore person works at a place and they're okay with letting them do shows there. I mean, people that, you know, have been in the hardcore scene for a while know you can go to a show at like a print shop or, you know, somebody's garage or a barber shop or, you know, I mean, Power of Dusk recorded a record in a print shop in Springfield, which was great. So it's just, you know, it's just some dingbat works at a place and their bosses will allow them to do some stuff there. I'm just kidding. It literally was that. We needed a room in town that was okay with, you know, throwing an all ages show. We had some spaces that would do it, but you know, times change and things change. So you just kind of got to figure it out. It was kind of down to the wire. This was probably last October. So October 2023, I promised some bands we would have a show. I probably overpromised on the venue a little early just so we could announce it. That venue didn't work out. We were pretty much down to, you know, the wire. And I just kind of asked my bosses, Robin and Tom over at C4A, and you know, they were okay with it. I kind of assured them, you know, it's, you know, I've run shows before, been going to shows a long time, and I'm, you know, not afraid to, you know, let people know if they're getting out of line, but we haven't had any of those issues ever at a C4A show. It's just been fun. So it's been about a year and a half or so of doing them, kind of ramping up a bit more lately. At the end of the day, it's not the best place for hardcore shows, but it's one of the only places in town that'll let us do it. And it's all done, you know, with the trust that we'll keep the place nice and tidy and put back the way it's supposed to be, and everybody will be cool. And that's the way it's been. So it's, again, just a time-honored tradition of having a hardcore show in a place you're not really supposed to have one.
Well, and you know, one of the things that I really, really appreciate is the idea of an all ages show. And especially if it is, I don't want this to sound like a judgment, because I don't mean it in that way, but I would say when most adults, whatever, who may not be as informed, think of a hardcore show, they don't think of something that would necessarily be all ages. I appreciate the idea of having an all ages venue or show that exposes kids to music that they may not normally get to. They may be able to hear it, they may be able to even see it on YouTube, etc., but to be able to go and see people perform it, and then be able to also have that opportunity to interact afterwards with the musicians.
Yeah,
I think there's this strange, can I say demystification?
Yeah.
No, I can't say it. Oh my gosh. Why is it like I have the right word, but I can't say it? Demystification of.
There we go.
That's a demystification of a certain perception. I mean, because honestly, I think, now here's an overgeneralization. I don't know if I've ever met a hardcore person that isn't the most kind, gentle.
It's crazy.
Because, you know, I'm under the strong conviction that those that perform hardcore basically have exercised all of their demons, you know, through that process.
That's true.
It's like they just clear, they catharsis, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Get rid of it. I think it's so important to have kids be able to see those performances, to feel comfortable learning that that's something that they can learn how to express themselves.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's such a healthy thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think most, like, there's that, like, misconception that it's unhealthy, you know, like, focus on unhealthy.
Sure. You know, all ages shows are definitely, you know, that's a hardcore and punk tradition. That's, you know, that's a thing. As they say, you know, it's a genre that's, you know, should be by and for the youth. You know, I'm not necessarily falling into that category anymore, but that's okay. You know, I grew up going to all ages shows. We had a great venue in Louisville, Kentucky, where I'm from, called Skull Alley. And that was all ages. You know, they'd have their bar for the people that wanted to partake, but for the most part, you know, a lot of the crowd was kids. I mean, it was a good mixed crowd. We had a great scene going. Obviously, scenes there is still going really well. You know, all throughout, we just had a great opportunity to go see every band we could. And a lot of bands that are, you know, really popular right now, I got to see, you know, at Skull Alley when I was a kid. And kind of transitioning into being somebody that can facilitate a show is cool. It's, you know, it's, I'm certainly not, you know, I'm not out there doing it for some, you know, crazy altruistic reason. I just, you know, have some bands that want to play some shows, and you know, it's nice to offer a spot that's more music focused, and it's, you know, it's not a party. You know, I'm not out there trying to make some money. You know, we only take money so we can, you know, pay the bands for coming out. Just trying to, you know, have some fun and have a spot for, you know, somebody to go that's not a bar, or if they can't get into the bar, or, you know, if they can't get into a, you know, they're not going to go to a college party. You know, there's lots of great show houses being run in town right now, but it's definitely more of, you know, more of a party vibe over there. And that's not really what we're doing at C4A. And that's, you know, it's not really the space for it. So it's literally just a spot to come hear some bands. And, you know, we do hardcore shows because I play in hardcore bands, but we're kind of down to book anything there. You just got to send me a message. We'll set something up. All our shows are all ages and, you know, no booze, no drugs, that kind of thing. Just to keep everything nice and chill so we don't got any problems. And we haven't had any so far. So we're gonna keep doing them.
Even beyond the all ages, how having it be no booze, no drugs, like how that makes a space be more accessible in some ways. Like, I mean, yeah. I would hate it if, I mean, I don't know how to articulate that, but if I had issues with substances, I would really lament not feeling comfortable going to a space that has, like to have a spot where you know you'd be kind of free from that. Yeah. I don't know, just exposure, however you want to put it, but somehow saying that something isn't allowed somehow makes it a little bit more inclusive, which I think most people don't think about that. But
yeah, and it's, you know, I'm not like, we got plenty of straight edge people, straight edge hardcore, obviously a really big part of the scene, but it is an all ages thing. It's to keep it chill for people of all ages to be there. If there's kids under 21 that want to come hang out, great. And, you know, and it's also to keep us from, you know, having issues. We can't have people, if we can't have people under 21 drinking, obviously, then, you know, I'm not going to check your ID at the door. I'm not going to hassle you for drink, all that kind of stuff. It just makes my life easier to not deal with it. And I have plenty of friends that are, you know, that are drinkers that are like, you know, they come out to the show. There's, you know, the Rose Bowl's right there. You can go enjoy your time, do what you need to do. It just makes my life easier. So it's, you know, everybody feels welcome and you're not going to be accosted by, you know, some drunk person, or you're not going to be, maybe the perception is it's punk rock, it's hardcore, there's, you know, potential for drugs, all that kind of stuff. It just kind of takes all that out. And that was never my experience going to shows. Sure, there was people, you know, smoking cigarettes, doing what you're doing, but for the most part it was about the music for our scene, and that's just kind of the scene that I came up in. And trust me, if I was talking to, you know, 22-year-old Johnny and being like, hey, in, you know, 8 years you're gonna run the sober space in town, I'd be like, that sounds lame. But, you know, here we are.
Yeah. One of the big questions in this section is, what makes a good music scene?
Man, it's a big question.
It is.
I think Champaign has always had a nice tradition of a healthy music scene. I'm talking about tradition a lot today. I'm a traditional guy. I think, you know, what we have a lot of is a lot of people who are just really, really invested in it, really invested in making music, in, you know, having shows, in, you know, doing podcasts, getting the music out there to an audience. There's new people coming in all the time, whether they're coming in from school or, you know, just moving here for, you know, whatever reason. And then there's that nice foundation of people here still doing it. So I think, you know, people who are just willing to put their time and energy and their talent into something for no other reason than to foster community and, you know, foster some stuff going on. And I think nobody can say, you know, there's not a whole lot of music coming out of Champaign and a whole lot of different artists, different stuff to see. You know, you can kind of wet your whistle any way you want in this town when it comes to music. So it's we're really lucky in that way.
What do you think Champaign-Urbana could do better for the music scene?
Oh boy, how long you got? No, I'm just kidding. You know, I might sound biased, but Champaign just really, you know, we need venues that are willing to open their doors up to other kinds of music, to lots of different stuff. You know, I'm not going to call anybody out or name names, but, you know, it's very hard to get a hardcore show booked in this town. It's very hard to get a punk show booked in this town, or, you know, it's hard to get anything that is perceived as, you know, something that might chase people away rather than something that's going to bring people in. You know, there's a scene of people that want the music that they like. I'm not saying that it's all hardcore, has to all be punk or whatever, but, you know, we had a death metal band playing at C4A last night, and, you know, I put a post on the Champaign Area Shows page, and, you know, this older guy who I wouldn't, you know, you normally expect to see at a C4A show asked, oh, it's, you know, death metal, where is this? And, you know, he came to the show, and which was awesome. So, you know, I was like, okay, there's people out there that want kinds of music. So I just think, you know, I pull my hair out and have a very hard time finding venues that are, you know, willing to just let us have an all ages show. And, you know, partially it's a rental fee, and I understand everybody's, you know, has to do what they have to do, but it's hard for kids, it's hard for people to shell out money to rent when you gotta pay the band, and you might have to pay your sound guy, whatever you gotta do. So, you know, the thing with this stuff is DIY is supposed to be showing people that it's something that you can do. It's not just do it yourself, it's do it, get some friends together and you all make something happen. And, you know, finding venues that are willing to open their doors and open their hearts to what's going on, I think would be great. And, you know, it's, again, I'm not calling anybody out or naming names, but I think there's a lot of music being made out there, a lot of original music being made, and we could use some venues that are willing to have us, not just my bands, you know, all these great bands.
Champagne is Also a Band podcast is proud to support Exile on Main Street. Exile on Main Street, located in the old train station building at 100 North Chestnut Street in downtown Champaign, has been helping to build record collections since 2004. Carrying a wide array of new and used LPs, CDs, and video games, Exile on Main Street has something for just about any music enthusiast and old school gaming devotee. Exile also hosts regular free live music shows on its stage, so be sure to check out their Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages for the up-to-date details on the next upcoming event. Open 7 days a week, they can be reached by phone at 217-398-MAIN. That's 217-398-6246. Welcome back. So, Johnny, what is your favorite non-musical thing or things?
I think it's no secret to those that know me. My favorite non-musical thing is, I guess it'd be skateboarding. Yeah, love skateboarding. Been skating probably, I don't even know, early 2000s is when I started. And, you know, off and on as far as, you know, how much I get to do it. But, you know, yeah, been skating since then and still get out there when I can.
You know, when I skated, was all skating and whatnot, it used to be that there were like three classifications, and I feel like this is kind of faded. No, well, it'd be like,
I know.
You
oh,
had
yeah.
You had like the, well, God, as if I could remember any of these things. Well, you had like you had freestyle, oh, or yeah, you had street, or you had ramp or vert, or right, whatever. And I feel like if you look at the style, and each at the time, the style of the board actually kind of, yeah, dictated what, oh, yeah, it was. And now almost all the skateboards just look like what used to be called the freestyle board.
I don't know.
Well, it's that kind of the hot dog looking thing where it's just a stick. See, I don't know what to call it, but
it's gotten,
but I'm curious.
Nowadays, that popsicle, everybody,
thank you, that's,
yeah,
a
the
good
popsicle
word
shape,
it,
everybody, hot dog, right. I like hot dog. It's definitely standardized, but it's been changed a lot, so every company kind of has their version of a popsicle, and, you know, your size matters, and, you know, your wheelbase, all that kind of stuff. People get really, really into that stuff. There's a lot of companies that make a more kind of retro shape or whatever, so it's kind of all opened up now, so it's almost not, it's, I don't know, it's almost like you're, there's it's not as simple as like freestyle, street, or vert. There's like, you like this style freestyle, he's more of a Japanese freestyle skater, or, you know, like, for example, I'm a big fan of, I guess it would be more considered like East Coast street skating, which is more kind of focused on simple tricks because the terrain is a little more rough to handle. Specifically, these videos called Eastern Exposure. So it's like, you know, classic 90s East Coast street skating. Maybe because I've never been able to do a lot of tricks myself. So seeing some kind of more simple, stylish stuff with a cool spot. It's funny to say non-musical because a lot of the skating I like is based around the, you know, the soundtrack of what they're skating to. Or, you know, when I was a kid, it was skate punk, you know, is, sure, or, you know, videos. I got introduced to like Gangstar and all this cool rap from skate videos. And, you know, we would even in college, we would put on, you know, the soundtrack for this video, Pretty Sweet. We'd like listen to all the stuff in that video. So yeah, it's funny to think for me, skating and music have always kind of been together, but skating is so big now. It's kind of the same as punk and hardcore. It's so big. There's so many people. There's so many different little pockets. And I guess I would be stuck in the curb skater category. I like to do slappy grinds and things like that, which is a whole category of skating.
At this point, I just worry about breaking my neck. So I don't think I'd ever do that. But oh, man. Last time I skated, it was probably still late 80s. So there you go. That was like Pal Peralta. And,
yes.
Yeah, you know. And you know, I kind of want to attribute the internet and being able to watch other people from all sorts of different locations. Because at the time, it was like, okay, well, you might be able to get a VHS of something. Here's one of my weird theories that I'll have to take out later of this thing. But I always think about the invention of the internet or whatever, the existence of the internet, very much like the Gutenberg, the printing press.
Right.
We've created a new renaissance because everybody can experience all these different parts.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I said, like, I didn't get very much, I was like, it was me that wanted to skate, and I didn't know anybody else. So I kind of wonder what my viewpoint of that would have been and how much I would have grown if I would have been able to interact with other people that liked it as well and seen all these different styles from other people.
When I grew up as a Bam Margera kid, like many, many millennial people my age, so it was kind of like, you know, that what Jackass was a big thing. So skateboarding was kind of having a new renaissance. Mm. So we, you know, me and my little pack of neighborhood friends, you know, just got boards and, you know, we're the classic suburban skater kids who were, you know, spent all day trying to learn to kickflip and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it kind of went away for a while. My friends kind of moved away from skating. So I did too. And then I kind of moved here and needed a way to get around campus. And I was kind of getting back into it anyway, but it kind of drew me back into, you know, skating again. And then, you know, YouTube had finally, all these people had taken their old VHSs and ripped them onto YouTube. Or, you know, some of those companies would do DVD reissues or whatever, their old videos, and they would go on YouTube. And it was like, okay, now I can find a bit of skating that I can relate to a bit more. Because when I was a kid, it was like, and we would hurt ourselves doing this. It was like, find your big stair set and just try to jump off of it because that's what you saw, you know, Jamie Thomas and all the guys in the Zero Skateboards videos doing. And that was, you know, full, it's called like the stuntman era of skateboarding. And, you know, we couldn't do any tricks. I couldn't do anything. I could barely ollie, but, that you know, three set was definitely a 20 set in my head. And, you know, I hurt myself a lot trying to do tricks I had no business doing. And so eventually getting older and kind of finally getting exposed to other styles of skating, I realized like, okay, you know, curb skating, there's old, we call it, you know, team slow and low. Go a little slow. You don't have to pop very high. You can just get your tricks off and hopefully get out there and not get hurt so you can go to work the next day. Right. But, you know, finally getting exposed to other styles, I was able to connect with skateboarding in my own way and not in the, you know, do the coolest, biggest, best trick. It was like, well, you know, I'm having fun. This is, you know, my favorite thing about skating is also my least favorite thing about skating is I'm not very good at it. It's really hard and I'm not very good at it. So it's nice to kind of have a hobby that I'm not so focused on being, you know, being the best or whatever. It's just, okay, if I can get away with making this trick, then I'm going to feel pretty good and I can, you know, go home or go, you know, go about my day and be happy. So yeah, skateboarding is all about just, for me, just, you know, sucking at it.
All right. Since this is my show, I'm just going to give a little shout out to No Board Left Behind CU and of course, Positive Push CU. Both are great organizations that are trying to make skating inclusive and to make it a community, which, you know, is super important. So check them both out, you know, find out all the great things that they do. Check them out and give them a follow on Instagram at No Board Left Behind CU And of course, Positive Push is at Positive Push CU. And now, back to my great outro. Johnny, thank you for being on the show and telling me all about your song, Eyes in the Back of Your Head by Unseen Forces, and talking about the music scene and your favorite non-musical thing, which is sucking at riding skateboards.
Oh, yes.
So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening to Champagne is Also a Band podcast. This is Johnny Lissardi from Unseen Forces, Jug, Power of Dusk, and Sun Stereo, reminding you, great music is out there. Go find it where you live. Everybody, we're gonna do great. Brave faces, all that kind of stuff.
That's a wrap.
Champagne is also a band.
You almost have an NPR voice. It's so good.
Luhava Studio, South Beaker, on the inside.
Wait, I left one out. Shit. One more time.